Welcome to Career Tools, our guidance on email relationships with suppliers. Here we go. Folks, this guidance answers the questions, how can I improve my relationship with suppliers through email? How can I stay professional but also friendly with suppliers? And how do I react to demanding emails from suppliers? If your knowledge of DISC, high D's, I's, S's, and C's, the perfectionists, the Attila the Huns, the marketers, the team players, if that has helped you become more effective at work, you'll want to seriously consider coming to our Effective Communications Conference. We set the basics of DISC in an hour or so, and then we spend the rest of the day teaching you how finally to communicate effectively, which is to pay attention to what your listener does and communicate in a way that makes sense to them. At the end of the day, you'll be able to read someone in a conversation, determine their major DISC tendency, and then based on that, make some changes in how you deliver to improve the chances that you get harmony and congruence and collaboration and not drama, conflict, and tension. Come see us. Okay, Wendy, we know for a lot of people, they've got to have a relationship with a supplier. Often they're managers, but sometimes they're not. Smart managers have delegated some of their relationships to their individual contributors. And there's a balance there. There's a small percentage, as you and I both know, that don't think there needs to be any balance. They're a supplier. We're going to do what we tell them. They're going to do what we tell them to do. And unfortunately, that works. And you get enough positive feedback to that that people jump or ask how high when you tell them to jump, that it's a problem. But on the other hand, the majority of people recognize that there's a little bit of tension between needing to be demanding and also maintaining a relationship so the demands won't fall on deaf ears. You don't want to be too friendly, which could imply that standards could be relaxed. On the other hand, too tight, too stern, too gruff causes friction, and that's not helpful. An email makes it more difficult, even though who would say, I would rather not have email to have to facilitate communication with suppliers in today's world. But unfortunately, emails tend to magnify. If there's no warmth in an email, it doesn't come across as no warmth. It comes across as cold. If there's no softness in an email, it doesn't come across as neutral. It comes across as hard. And that's partially because, largely because, we don't have facial expressions and body language and the trust that comes from seeing another person, touch, handshaking another person, those kinds of things. And so we've got some guidance on how to do it. What's our guidance?
It's pretty simple. Be cheerful and friendly and be less factual, which there's a bunch of high C's who just went,
yeah, no, you can't. You cannot. And our audience skews slightly high C, so this better be good.
It is. It doesn't mean exclude the facts. It just means we're going to add some more stuff to the facts.
Yes. I think what it is rather than saying being less factual, talk about more than facts, right? That's the key. In other words, if facts used to make up 95% of your emails, then now you need to make up 55%.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Good.
There's a lot of DISC in here. Will you do a 2-minute, like, this is what DISC is for people who haven't heard those costs?
So, folks, if you don't know, if you're just joining us, if we've done this podcast for 10 years now and Manager Tools for 11 years, this guidance will rely on some vocabulary that we have used for, well, I've used it for 30 years now, based on a widely available, highly popular, highly scientific behavioral profile called DISC. If you're not familiar with DISC off the top of your heads, you may be familiar with Myers-Briggs, which is a large competitor to DISC. It's that kind of thing, but we think DISC is better. And as a general rule, DISC, the four letters D, I, S, and C, represent four different rough approximations of behavioral tendencies, not personality. Personality is a very different thing, but behavioral tendencies. If you picture a circle, and if you think of the circle as being caught up into four quadrants by two radiuses, or I'm sorry, diameters that have perpendicular, a horizontal and vertical axis, sort of like an X and Y axis on a graph. In the top left, you have the D's, in the top right, you have the I's, in the bottom right, you have the S's, in the bottom left, you have the C's. And the idea behind that is about half the people in the world tend to be thought of as more assertive than average. And the other half of the people in the world see themselves and behave as if they're less assertive or they're more reserved in more situations. That distinction is represented by the top hemisphere and the bottom hemisphere. People on the top, the D's and I's, tend to be assertive, and the S's and C's on the bottom tend to be see themselves as more reserved. D's and I's would say, of course I'll take action. I want to go fast. I want to make a difference. And the S's and C's say, wait, let's make sure we have our ducks in a row first before we go off half-cocked. So if you ever experienced that, if you're a more reserved person and you find somebody a little bit too wild, they're probably a D or an I, and it's not unusual that you don't naturally get along with them. The left and right hemispheres, and of course these hemispheres overlap, the left and right hemispheres represent one's interest in working with people. The right hemisphere are people who tend to be people-focused. So people who naturally will smile more often, who will know people's names, who will seek to connect with other people rather than working individually. Those are the I's and S's of the world. On the left-hand side, we have those people who tend to be less interested in people. They don't avoid people assiduously, but they tend to prefer to be alone a little bit more often than the I's and S's. And those are the D's and C's. And they tend to be more task focused in their behavior at work. They focus on lists. They think about getting things done and so on. Now, when you put together these two opposing drives, assertive reserved and task and people, you get four quadrants. As I mentioned, D's and C's, you go around the circle as a clock from top left to bottom left. High D is, as you could probably figure out, an assertive person who is also task-focused. These are the hard-driving, take-no-prisoners, probably a little bit gruff, but absolutely clutch in a pinch. High Ds. D stands for dominance. Examples are Patton, MacArthur, Margaret Thatcher, other really forceful, sort of not warm leaders, confident, forceful kind of people. The high I's, who are like high D's, I stands for influence, high I's are like D's in that they're assertive, but they're assertive in a people way. So the high I's are your marketing and salespeople, friendly, outgoing, cheerful, shaking your hand, looking you in the eye, dressing sharp, always the life of the party, talk, driving the high D's crazy, frankly, in that way. And D's and I's both tend to be assertive. If we go below the line on the right-hand side of the circle, we have high S's. I's and S's are similar in that they tend to be people-focused, but high I's are assertive with people, friendly, outgoing, cheerful. High S's tend to be reserved, people-focused. So they tend to be the glue that holds team together. They are the team mother, the team father. They know how everybody's feeling. If a high D doesn't know how someone on his or her team is feeling, he goes and asks the high S, and he or she knows. D's get frustrated with high S's because high S's are always talking about how people feel. It's important that you feel good if you work with a high S. S's like connecting with other people and tend to be pretty loyal and tend to be fairly comfortable following processes and rules and so on. By the way, examples of high I's are Bill Clinton, very high I. Almost anybody who hosts a Today show, a morning show on TV, cheerful, outgoing, so on. Ooh, and another example of a high D that's a modern version is Simon Cowell is a classic example of a high D. Examples of high S's, high I's. Examples in the U.S. would be Magic Johnson, the ex-basketball player. Whereas Michael Jordan and LeBron James are both high D's. Tiger Woods is also a high D. A lot of weather people who do weather on TV are high I's. Al Roker, who I think does it on the Today Show.
I've never thought of that. Because anybody who's not a high I but is interested in weather works in the meteorology
service. And they're high C. Exactly right. The people who talk about weather, well, the joke among weather people is, you understand that I'm in sales and not in operations, right? The guy who's selling you the weather, it doesn't. Yeah, of course, they're doing both. So examples of high S's are Mother Teresa, Pope John Paul, the American popular now deceased TV show host, Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And by the way, he was an S in real life as well. He didn't just play one on TV. And then lastly, we come to high C's. C stands for conscientiousness. These people are reserved and task focused. These tend to be the engineers, the scientists, Those with a PhD often are high C's. The software developers, the QA managers, and so on, they want to work alone. They like to dot their I's and cross their T's and annoy everybody else, especially the high I's, by dotting other people's I's and crossing other people's T's. High C's believe it's important to do things right. Examples of high C's are the chairman of the Federal Reserve, former chairman of the Federal Reserve, Alan Greenspan, and Ben Bernanke. I think Angela Merkel is probably a high C, high D. Almost every NFL football coach who's really, really good is probably a high C with a lot of high D as well. Spock and Data from the famous Star Trek are classic examples of high C's. Not really emotive externally. So was that enough? I probably talked too long, didn't I?
No, it's fine. Go. And if people want more on this, there's a ton of stuff on the website, and you can also take the profile. You can fill in the questionnaire to find out what profile you are.
And let me also say this. You know, we don't do a good job of talking about our services. But if you're struggling in communicating and relating at work, we highly recommend our Effective Communications Conference, which happens virtually every time we do an Effective Manager Conference. The day after is Effective Communications Conference. You don't have to go to both. You can go to just one. We're probably in a city near you if you're in the United States sometime during the year. We also go to Europe, we go to Asia, we go to Australia as well. And at our Effective Communication Conference, we teach you that communication is what the listener does. And we guarantee you will learn how to read another person's behavior in about 2 minutes and be able to make small adjustments to how you talk to them, including by email, which is what we're talking about here today in this cast, and it will make you more effective. Even though managers who come to the Effective Manager Conference say that was the most important training I've ever been to, the one that gets the most surprising responses, the one that causes people just to have their eyes opened about how they've been communicating, is the Effective Communications Conference. So we recommend you come. Okay. Sorry, Wendy.
That's okay. So now we've all got the idea of what DISC is and the different ways people behave in the workplace. The first instruction or the first section of this guidance is be cheerful and friendly. And half of the people all went, well, of course I would be. The I's and the S's are like, how else is there to behave?
Yes.
And the D's and C's are like, I don't want to be friendly. I just want to get stuff done.
Right.
And the relationship-focused people who write longer emails, who ask more questions about people, who talk about events and people, they are usually relentlessly cheerful and friendly, and their emails tend to get more response.
Yes.
Whereas people like me, I'm a high D, and see emails, we only include the pertinent facts, and we just write what needs to be required. Every month I get a report from Google that tells me of all my emails, how many had more than 100 words. And I think it goes 150, 40, 30, 10, and less than 10 words.
Mm-hmm.
And my graph every month, like the majority of my emails have less than 10 words because who needs more words? But as we're gonna say, like, it doesn't always work. And high C emails tend to be long, but they tend to be factual. They tend to have lots of information in them and not a lot of warmth. And there's an advantage for people who have that relationship sense, that warmth and that wanting to connect with the person, because they're able to connect with whom there might be a piece of friction because of the relationship, because of the way the relationship is created. And they're able to overcome that friction using their warmth. So a supplier relationship has a friction because there's, I want your money, I want your service, I want more, and I want more. And there's that kind of it's not conflict exactly, but friction in that, you know, both people want more out of it and want to give less because that's the way commercial relationships work. And so if you're a D or a C and you write these factual emails, and in a way you're just adding to the friction, whereas friendly and cheerful, it doesn't take it away entirely, but it does take a little bit of it away because the person who's receiving the email feels like they're getting something. Yep. It's not monetary or anything, but they're getting a piece of you that's sort of warm and cheerful.
Let me say this differently. If you have been a direct of a manager before, and that manager tended to have a very unwarm, direct, forceful approach with you, and basically relied to a great degree on role power, didn't think relationships were important, and was fairly dismissive of you, ask yourself whether you like that. Now, I'm not suggesting that you should want a boss who's Mr. Happy or Mrs. Happy, but do you like that sort of role relationship only, role power only relationship with a boss? 95% of you say no. I don't mind demanding. I don't mind high standards, but I expect to have some sort of relationship. I want to be able to come to you and talk to you when I got problems. And I want, if there's a problem, I want you to treat me with respect. The problem with suppliers is you don't really think about it, but you have role power over them. If all you do is state facts, and I'll come back to the issue of what facts you state. The problem is when you state facts that are negative or detrimental or indicate failure, without a relationship, there will be resentment. And the only problem with that is if you've chosen well, there's many problems with it, but one of the hidden problems with it is if you have chosen well and your supplier does better and has more folks, believe me, suppliers make choices not just about contracts, because not all contracts suggest that no other contract matters. So therefore, they have choices to make about how they spend their time. They're going to spend the time on the customers that are most profitable and they have the best relationship with. Your relationship with suppliers is just like boss to subordinate. And if you're an individual contributor and you're being strictly factual and you put, and I'm putting air quotes, Joey air quotes around strictly factual, and you think you can get away with it, you're right. But so could that boss who got away with it, who didn't get your last full measure of work devotion because he or she treated you with disdain or what amounted to disdain. They wouldn't say, oh, no, I care about my people. I just believe that, you know, distance is better. And so I'm going to be gruff and no nonsense, and I'm not going to show them I care, and I'm not going to talk to them like I care, and I'm not going to be there for them when they need somebody. I'm going to be arm's length all the time. Well, if you didn't like that, that's what you're doing to a supplier if you're not willing to be cheerful and friendly. It's role power. It's simple as that. How will you behave with role power? And if you're a manager and you're listening to this and you've listened to us talk about relationships with your directs, if you're doing one-on-ones with your directs and you're working on your relationship, you have to immediately see the logic of being cheerful and friendly, creating some sort of showing personal respect for the individuals who actually support you in your relationship that essentially has role power between the organizations, between you and your suppliers.
And being cheerful and friendly adds positive energy to any interaction. Like, even if you're discussing a problem, if you can be chilled and laid back and view it in a positive way, like, this person didn't deliberately screw up and there's a problem, but we're going to fix it together and it's eminently fixable and it's going to be easy, and you have all of that kind of in your head so that what you say comes out as positive, the problem is much more likely to be fixed, and it is more likely to be fixed in a way that's conducive to a continuing relationship. If you say something to someone in a way that's accusing or negative, then all they can do, all they want to do is defend themselves.
Exactly. And that essentially says, you're stating your case, I'm stating my case. And now we're not reaching across the aisle, we're digging in.
Yeah. And you have that piece of no man's land between you, and it can't be crossed if you're both in that kind of, if you're just digging in, right? It's just going to be ammunition that goes across.
Extending a hand across the aisle and saying, hey, maybe that was me, or hey, I'm sorry we're being so hard on you. Rather than seeing that as weakness, see it as utter confidence in your strength and recognizing that you're actually showing respect for the other person. And the more respect you show, the more respect you'll get. Now, if you're not somebody who believes that, if you believe that any show of respect to the other person is a relative changing of the power and you're giving them more power, well, you don't have to listen to the rest of this because you're wrong and that's dumb. That's okay. You're welcome to your opinion, but you're unlikely to like much of our guidance for the rest of our lives.
That's true.
So can we have an example? Is there?
Yeah. So I got two examples. This is a very short one.
This is an email from a customer to a supplier. Mm-hmm. That is, when I read it, I'm like, it's totally normal. I've seen thousands of emails like this.
Yeah.
Okay. So Vernon is the vendor and Charlie is the customer.
Okay. So let's imagine that Vernon is one of these people who is not cheerful and friendly. And
No. We don't need to imagine that at all. No, we're just going to give him the email.
Okay.
Vernon is just Vernon. We don't know anything about Vernon. He's the vendor. Mm-hmm. And Charlie, the customer, is writing him an email.
Okay. And it goes like this. Vernon, the load came in today and it's 3 pallets short. When can you get that fixed? Charlie.
Good. Now, you couldn't even do it. I'm going to read it 2 different ways. And I'm going to show something. So now I'm going to read it. It doesn't matter how Charlie wrote it. I'm going to read it as if I'm Vernon and I have a relationship with Charlie. Vernon, the load came in today and it's 3 pallets short. When can you get that fixed? Charlie. Now I'm going to read it as if Charlie hasn't built a relationship with Vernon. And Vernon gets these kind of notes all the time when they make a mistake. Vernon, the load came in today and it's 3 pallets short. When can you get that fixed, Charlie? Now, the problem is, Charlie might say, well, that's not the tone I use when I wrote the mail.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, you could put in parentheses, written in a very pleasant and respectful tone with a winky face, and that would be funny and people would laugh. And of course, the answer to this is more often than not, if you have negative information to share, one of the solutions is call. So on voicemail, you could say, Vernon, hey, it's Charlie. Hope you're having a good day. Load came in today and it's 3 pallets short. Something you can do to get that fixed. I'd really appreciate it. Give me a call back in the next hour. Thanks, Charlie.
Yeah, that's why you have voice. That's why you have phones and voicemail.
Yeah.
But if we had to use email and we wanted to make it more cheerful and friendly.
Yeah, because we have time zone differences, blah, blah, blah. Right. Good. Or there are clients that say, and there are vendors that say, we respond to all requests. You essentially have to send an email because the email goes into a queuing service and so on. Anyway, all right, go ahead. So Vernon and Charlie.
Vernon, thank you for delivering the load on time today. I know you worked hard to get it here for us, and I appreciate that. My supervisor counted, and he thinks we're 3 pallets short. Is that possible, or is he miscounting? I can send you the pallet numbers that we received, if that's helpful. Let me know if there's any way I can be helpful here. Charlie.
Yeah. And the beauty of this is the first email conveys the problem. But it's short, it's direct, it's factual, and for some people, it's negative. And it's even negative sometimes for a high D or even a high C who's not much of a relationship builder if they're having a bad day, which you don't know. The second one takes a little longer to write. It may be not in your comfort zone, but it definitely sends a message, a much more pleasant feeling. It has the feeling of us rather than just you working on a problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
And look, it also gives the guy an out. In the previous email, when can you get that fixed? If the guy feels that there may be something on your end, when can you get that fixed is not something that brooks the idea that it may be on my end. Or there may be a misunderstanding. Or, hey, you guys changed that, and I have the updated load report right here. The pallet number is right here, right? It gives leeway. And you can send the first one. The load came in today, 3 pallets short. When can you get that fixed? You can get away with that. If I'm your vendor and you and I know each other well, I got no problem with that. But if you don't know me well, and I'm a high S or a high I, and I'm having a bad day, you may get what you want, but you've also damaged the relationship. And it ends up being perhaps, if I'm going to be generous to you, penny wise and pound foolish.
Exactly.
Okay. And I'll tell you what, my dad used to say, you can take more than you give, but only for a little while until they run you out of town. Which basically means you can use your royal power to get what you want, but you're whittling away at the relationship. And when the crap hits the fan and there's no relationship, your vendor will not give you the last full measure of things. And heaven forbid, you're in charge of the relationship. You continue to use your royal power. Finally, you hit a guy in a bad day. You're asking him to do something he can't do. You've never given him any love in any way, shape, or form. You've never sent a mail that was polite. You've never called him and said thank you. If you're the guy or gal who hasn't developed a relationship and has been factual, but only when it's negative, and without a relationship, and then there's a significant problem, and you catch your vendor on a bad day, they might throw up their hands and say, you know what? Enough. We can't deal with you anymore. And now you've got a problem because you don't get to manage the vendor out of the relationship. Your responsibility is twofold. Make sure the vendor meets his requirements or her requirements and maintain the relationship. It's just like managing. Get results and retain the relationship. If you don't work on the relationship, and when the stuff hits the fan, you don't have anything. You don't have anything to reach back and say, buddy, I need a favor here. I need some help. Even if you believe that, well, they're a vendor and they signed a contract, so therefore it shouldn't matter, you're the one that's going to be left holding the bag. And you would not want to be a manager or an individual contributor in a large organization who was responsible for a relationship that a vendor said, we're no longer going to be supporting this. Particularly if they have data which says they've done a lot of good things, they have a lot of facts on their side, and all you've done is talk about facts that were failures. Okay, which leads us to our second point, which is be less factual, which just drives me absolutely bananas saying it. I'm struggling with that as a high D myself.
But we've talked a lot about feeling and relationships, and there's probably people going that email isn't about feelings and relationships. Email is about communicating things.
Communicating facts, hypothetically.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the conveyance of information. But the problem is that there's a person at the other end, and the person at the other end is not just someone who absorbs facts. They absorb all the other things, and they have feelings.
People have feelings. You may not like it, but it's true.
It's amazing. Even really high Ds. I mean, I get emails sometimes, and I feel like I've worked on something really hard, and I've put lots of effort into it, and I'm really proud of it. And then somebody sends me something that says, thanks. And I just, oh.
Who might that be? Folks, if you don't know, I'm Wendy's boss, so.
I wasn't thinking of you, I promise.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Good.
When you send emails that only have facts in it or just don't have anything else around them, they can be perceived as negative or demanding.
And here's what's important about that, folks. Some of you are listening right now and you're saying, oh, Wendy said they can be perceived as negative and demanding, but that's not what I meant. Folks, get over yourself. It doesn't matter what you think. It doesn't matter what you say. It doesn't matter what you meant. It only matters what the other person thinks you meant. And if you're wondering why you struggle in some relationships, that is the nut of the problem. You have been saying things that in your head are okay, but to the other person are not okay, because you're probably not considering their role, their power, their relationship with you, and the different behavioral tendencies they have than you have. Okay. When Judy sends me 3 or 4 text messages and I say, no, no, no. And then finally she says, are you okay? I say, I'm fine. Why are you talking? Well, I asked you a series of questions and all you did was say, no, it sounds like you're mad. I said, I'm not mad. I was just being efficient. You said, do you want to fly out earlier? I said, no. You said, do you want to change your seat? I said, no. You said, do you want to get in any earlier? And I said, no. And I'm literally giving you exactly what you want. What she wants me to do is say, no, thank you. I really appreciate you thinking of me. And I let her down a little bit by not communicating in a way that makes sense to her. But then she responded to me by suggesting that I was feeling something that, in fact, I was not. So it doesn't matter what you think. It doesn't matter what you say. It doesn't matter what you mean. All that matters is what the other person thought you meant. And that's not easy to get right if all you're doing is what makes sense to you. That's the point where facts can be perceived as negative demanding when in fact, you high C's, I agree with you, no fact is negative or demanding. But people can perceive it that way. That's what we like to joke that numbers don't lie. Well, the point of the famous quote, numbers don't lie, guys, is not that numbers don't lie, but that it points out that if numbers are being lied about, the numbers aren't what's lying. It's the people who are reading the numbers who are lying about them. That's the beauty of numbers don't lie. So people have opinions about numbers. People have feelings about facts. It's annoying, I agree, but it's true. And you don't get to ignore really fundamental truths of the world. Well, you can, but it's like gravity. You can ignore it all you want, but it really tends to work whether you like it or not.
Yeah, it's annoying, isn't it? Okay, so shall we try a factual email and see how we can make it less factual?
Yeah, and the point is, Wendy already said this. When we say be less factual, we don't mean don't send facts. It doesn't mean less facts. It means present those facts amongst non-facts in a way that can soften the negative, if in fact there's a negative, and builds the relationship. Because if you're going to pinch somebody and any statement of to somebody else that they didn't do what they're supposed to do is a pinch, any pinch is damage to the relationship. If there is no relationship, pinches start drawing blood. If there's a relationship, you can pinch me all the time. When my friends let me down, I don't mind. When a stranger says he'll do something and he lets me down, now I mind, because the only relationship we have is he said he'd do X and I said I'd pay him Y, right? And so now the contract is broken. When we have a friendship, part of the contract is I'm willing to forgive you. If we have a professional relationship, part of that contract is I'm willing to forgive you.
Okay, here we go. Vernon, we have checked the consignment B374-03957. SIPS, 14 defective. DIPS, 100% defective. SIRDIPS, 18 defective. Please resolve ASAP.
Charlie.
It sounds pretty.
Sign Charlie.
Yeah. Maybe or maybe not. Actually, Charlie might well not sign that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've always liked the thing. There's an enormous difference between three different ways of describing the word that can be written, lowercase or uppercase, ASAP. Some people say, please resolve as soon as possible. As soon as possible to me is important, but it's not on fire. ASAP is a little bit more, but in the Army, when I was in the Army many, many 30 plus years ago, the way we said that was ASAP, which to me says right bloody now.
That sounds a bit like stat in stat, medical terminology, exactly. Doesn't it? It's like it's got that short, sharp, get it done now or else.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so that's one way of doing it, and we wouldn't recommend that. It's technically true, but it can be damaging, and it will be damaging in the long run. You just hope you're going to get away with roll power alone. So now let's do a different one.
Okay, so, Vernon, thank you for the consignment you sent on Monday with the chips for IBM. It's consignment number B374-03957, if you don't have it handy. We received all the boxes on the manifesto, which was great. Unfortunately, the dip box was crushed, I assume by the courier, and all the dips were ruined. As you know, we need to supply IBM with the process chips by Monday week, which in American is next Monday. I just realized I wrote that in English. Is there any way you can get another box for us? We also have 14 SIPs and 18 SIRDIPs, which are not testing as sound. Could you throw in some replacements? We did overorder to make sure we had enough, but we'll still be a couple of short. I know you're working hard to make this contract a success for all of us. Just let me know what I can do to help. Charlie.
Genius.
It's not more words that make the difference. You can't just like add
other words. Factual words.
Exactly.
Good.
It's more about helping them out, right? Because if you get an email about a contract and you have that one of those consignment systems that gives everything a random number that you can never remember, having someone say, hey, it's this one, where you can copy and paste it from the email to search for it, it's just a finesse, a courtesy that
yes.
things easier for you, and telling them that it was probably the courier that crushed the box and that's what's the problem with the dips means that they can go and file a claim and potentially get that money easier.
And folks, remember, if you're managing a vendor, there's probably a contract, or if there's not a written contract, there is an assumed one, which is they do what they say they were going to do and you pay them. Wait until you send emails like, we have checked the consignment, defective, 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 please resolve ASAP. Wait until you do that a few times, and then your vendor sends you a message which says, who's our guy? Oh, Charlie, you are 3 days late with your payment, which puts you in arrears. Please resolve ASAP, Vernon.
We cannot supply you until you're current.
You can't find fault with that. You can't, because that's what you've asked for. You're the dominant party in the relationship as the customer, and you're saying this is appropriate relationship speak. And like it or not, the problems you have when shipments aren't perfect are equivalent to them when payments aren't on time or complete or full or so on. When you say net 30 and then you take longer than net 30, or when they say net 30 to you and you agree and it takes you longer than 30 days and your first response is, gosh, this guy's writing me this note. Doesn't he understand it comes out of finance and all this other stuff? Yeah, he probably does. And he doesn't care to some degree because you've basically implied that all we're going to do is talk facts. And by the way, there's no manager who's going to think you're a good relationship, a good vendor manager. And that's part of being a professional.
Yeah. And the other thing in this is that the difference between this one and the first one is that Charlie puts himself in the subordinate position. He doesn't say, Vernon, this is your fault. There's no blame. It's just, how can we work this out together? And if Vernon was consistently delivering manifestos or whatever with defects and that wasn't in the contract, right? So they have a 3% defect rate that's allowed by the contract, and he consistently delivers 10%. When you're waiting for the delivery and you're asking him to resolve that problem that you need, you know, however many it is that actually work, that's not the time to say, hey, you're consistently not delivering this about the contract.
Exactly.
That you want to have a different conversation at a different time when there isn't any urgency and when there isn't any additional drama around it.
Yeah.
So being like this doesn't preclude having that conversation.
And let's also say this. Some of you aren't going to be comfortable coming up on the spur of the moment with friendly and cheerful phrases. I mean, I send notes that have some personality to them, and people are like, they say like, wow, that's the warmest email I've ever gotten. I'm like, dude, you must not talk to very many warm people. So if you see something used that is cheerful, that's friendly, that someone else whom you respect or you know would use that, even though they're not like you, you know, they're a marketing person and you're an engineer, don't be afraid to copy and paste it. Use it for later. I'll give you a perfect example. Some of you find it annoying that a person would write a note to you that says, Dan, great to talk to you last night. Sorry I was in the golf course. I definitely will call you tonight. Looking forward to catching up. Cheers, Mark, which is the sign off, right? At the end of the email. There are some of you who find it annoying that people use the word cheers. Okay. You think, oh, well, that's not, ew, that's too cheesy or somehow too slimy or too high eye for me. There are people that are five levels above you in your organization that do it. Your dislike of that is a personal thing. You can expand your communication skills. It's not going to make you a bad person. Okay? And if you're not willing to expand your communication skills, when you start having to have really important relationships with people who are very different than you, which is what executive life is all about, if you don't have it, you're going to be in trouble. You're going to be struggling. And why do we talk about respect and collaboration while then saying, but I only want to be me? That just doesn't make sense. If you're going to respect other people and collaborate with other people, you have to do it in a way that makes sense to them. It's just simple. Oh, no, Mark. No, I want to be authentic with myself. Fine. Be authentic with yourself by yourself. You know, when people say, hey, you know, I really want a job working with people, the joke the HR person says, well, that's good because all the jobs with dogs and trees in our company are taken. You need to learn how to work with people. And part of working with people is being willing to be friendly, willing to be kind, willing to be forgiving when mistakes are made. Be able to add something other than facts, more relationship stuff, more high S stuff to your relationships, particularly with suppliers. Otherwise, when the stuff hits the fan, you're going to be the one left holding the empty bag. It's going to be your head on the block.
And you don't know what impression your emails are giving necessarily. If you're getting a response, you have no idea. We did a transfer between recruitment systems. We had like 8,000 open jobs. And when the jobs got transferred, they were all in the wrong status. And so all the people on site were sending us notes and saying, hey, this job should be in this status.
Right.
And there was a bunch of us. We had 100, maybe 1,000 of these emails, and we were working through them at like 30 or 40 an hour. So we were going really fast. And I was just replying to each email saying, done, because like that's all they needed to know, right? That I'd done the change. And after a few days, it kind of quietened down, and somebody called and asked me a bunch of questions. And I was like, oh, you want to talk to so-and-so? And they only work on Thursdays, and you want to do this. And if you can't find her, try this person and, you know, whatever, a bunch of information.
I bet they said, you sound so nice. I thought you were horrible.
That's right. She said, they told me you'd be really nice and helpful, and I couldn't imagine you were going to be from your emails.
Yeah.
And I was mortified. And it took me a day. Literally a day of thinking, like, what else should I be writing on these emails? And I literally went round the table and said, what's everybody else writing? And stole someone else's way of doing it, because I didn't want to be. I did want to help them.
Yeah.
I just couldn't think of it for myself. And, you know, it's the way to go. Steal stuff.
Okay. Thanks, Wendy. This is a good one.
So cheerful and friendly.
Okay.
Thanks. Bye, everyone.
That's it, everybody. Simple, direct, and it'll save you some trouble. See you next week.
Career Tools produces actionable guidance for professionals every week. To receive additional materials via our newsletter and to find products for situations you may face, go to www.managertools.com. Search for Career Tools on Twitter and LinkedIn.